This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Terry Anderson of the Hoover Institution and Professor Nick Parker of the Hoover Institution. Also, Nick is at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where he is in the Department of Agriculture and Applied Economics, and with his colleagues, Jennifer Rayner and Corbett Granger, Nick has published Wolves Make Roadways Safer. How? The presumption I had when I started reading this article was, oh, well, they hunt. They're like deer hunters, but that's not the full story. Professor, what is the landscape of fear you refer to in your paper?
Landscape of fear is an idea in ecology that once you have an apex predator in the environment, in the landscape, it changes the behavior of all other animals that are subservient to that predator. And so their behavior could change, their travel routes could change, the time of day in which they move around could be affected, all to avoid predation. And so so we wondered how that idea might pertain to the big problem of deer damages in places of the country where deer are overabundant. Deer damages could include damages to crop, perhaps a role in the spread of Lyme disease, but also what we focused on, deer vehicle collisions. And so we thought it was possible not only that wolves could reduce deer vehicle collisions by reducing the number of deer, but they may also affect deer vehicle collisions by affecting how deer behave, the times of day they travel and the travel routes they might take. And if wolves do affect DVCs in this way, it would be consistent with this idea that wolves do create a kind of landscape of fear.
The question that came to mind as I was reading your paper, Professor, does it matter how many wolves? Is one wolf enough to make it clear that the deer are not safe? How instinctive is that relationship?
We try to sort that out in our paper, and I'm afraid we don't have a firm answer, but what we find is that the presence of wolves seems to be sufficient. The presence of wolves in these county areas is sufficient to reduce deer vehicle collisions, at least in Wisconsin, which is our study area. If you increase the number of wolves beyond a single pack, it's less certain what that additional effect of more wolves would be on the damages to deer. But we do find that just the presence of wolves does alone seem to be sufficient to really curtail and change behavior.
Terry, the surprise to me also from the professor's paper was to learn that deer are more damaging to the environment than even to vehicles, that they change the nature of the ecology, the ecosystem outside my window. They also introduce the deer tick, which is extremely dangerous. I do live in the Connecticut, the home of the Lyme disease. Do you have similar observations of the changing ecology of the landscape where you are, Terry, because the as you say, the elk are cautious?
Absolutely. And I'd say both elk and deer are moving around much differently than they did when I first moved to where we live now. You never saw the elk out in this big open wheat field in front of our house prior to the wolf reintroduction. Once the wolves started to migrate out of Yellowstone, the elk started popping up in these fields in front of our house. And farther down the road, deer, the same thing. They are out in the open fields much more. You could see them any time of day because they don't want to be up in the forest where the wolves are much less likely to come out in the open around houses. The other thing that I think is interesting is with these deer out in these open fields, that there probably are a few more deer vehicle collision because there's a major street that goes right through where the deer are. The one benefactor of these is the bald eagle, because when a deer gets hit by a car, not eaten by a wolf, the bald eagles move in. And every day when I drive into town, I see two or three bald eagles majestically sitting in trees, thanking the people whose cars got damaged.
Professor, another thing I've learned from your paper is that there has been what you'd have to say uninformed management of the environment, especially when it comes to large animals like the deer. To your experience, and I know that your writing of Wisconsin, has this effect of deer and wolves been taken into account by, say, the authorities, the agriculture department in Washington, or the states where the wolf states across the northern part of the country? Do they realize this relationship is a balance, and that when it gets out of balance, we're overrun by deer?
That's a great question. So one thing I'll point out is that if wolves are having this landscape of fear type effect, then they're changing the behavior of the prey, whether it's elk or antelope or deer, in a way that seasonal human hunters can't really substitute for. You know, the wolves are present in the environment all the time. Seasonal deer hunters are not. And so a management policy that uses human hunters to cull the population would not be a perfect substitute for the role of the predator. And so then to have good policy that takes into account the role of predators, we need to know more than just how a predator affects the number of prey. We need to know how the predator affects the behavior of the prey. And so when we had bounty, you know, Terry mentioned federal and state government bounty programs to eliminate wolves, we were at the time thinking of only the first order damages that wolves would have on livestock and human property, and not really thinking so much about the second order effects. For example, if you eliminate wolves, what's going to fill the space that is vacated by wolves? Well, what has filled that space is coyotes. And coyotes are damaging as well. They eat livestock, they eat sheep, they eat calves. And so when we think about, well, what are the net effects of wolves, even on livestock, we need to account for the fact that if wolves weren't present, there would be more coyote, and coyote would also prey on livestock, and coyote would prey on, or wolves would prey on other meso predators, they're called, so foxes and other animals that play a role in controlling ticks. So it's a very complex ecosystem that we're playing with. And when we have these government policies that don't understand the entire system or account for it, you use the word balance, you get way out of balance, and it can be very costly.
The paper is Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences of the United States of America, PNAS, is entitled "Wolves Make Roadways Safer, Generating Large Economic Returns to Predator Conservation." Jennifer Rayner, Corbett Granger, and Dominic Parker. Terry Anderson of the Hoover Institution, Professor Parker of the Hoover Institution. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.